This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night. Weathered Optimist, from an album called Still Still, from Jan Slater. My guest tonight on Bent Notes is the Melbourne-based vocalist, composer and educator who is perhaps best known, I think, for her pure-sounding voice, as we've just heard, and her inventive improvisations and compositions. She was encouraged by her father, I've read, not to take singing lessons until she reached 16 years of age. And to find out why, and to understand the benefits of this approach, it's my pleasure to welcome to the Bent Notes studio here at Joy 94.9, Jeanne Slater.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Your father encouraged you not to take singing lessons until you turned 16. At first glance, that to me sounds as if it's trying to discourage you from doing anything, but I get the feeling from what you're doing now that maybe that wasn't quite the case.
Yeah, my dad is a singer himself, and my mum's a musician as well, so I grew up in a very musical family. And I think my dad wanted me to have a lot of music in my childhood and to learn instruments and to get a really good music education. But he really believed that it was important that I developed a very natural approach to my singing. And he felt that, you know, a lot of the teaching of singing in young people often pushes them towards a kind of voice or a style, a genre or a style of music or a style of singing, sort of locks them into that quite early. And he kind of wanted me to feel that I had musical options and to feel that my voice could develop as I grew older. So, you know, and I think being a vocal teacher myself now, I really appreciate that. I probably would give the same advice, you know, that until you're sort of around that age of 16, your voice is still really, it's really young. It's still, I mean, your voice is developing throughout your whole life. It always changes. But until you have a little bit of a level of maturity where you can sort of be curious and interested in what your voice does and not in trying to sound like someone else, you know, it's a nice idea to kind of explore the rest of your musical life. I did a lot of singing. I did a lot of singing with my dad and I sang in lots of choirs. So I was singing all the time. But yeah, the formal singing lessons didn't really start till I was about 16.
Did you feel at the time that your father was being fair in saying, don't take formal lessons?
Yeah, I didn't actually really want them, so it was fine with me. I was enjoying taking piano lessons and enjoying being in choirs that I was in, and I did lots of performing with my sort of my own kind of groups from an early age, and I was writing a lot of my own music, so my musical life was really rich and I felt that I was learning a lot from the, you know, various places. So, yeah, I didn't feel, you know, an urgency in having singing lessons, and when I started it, you know, I felt ready for it, so yeah.
So before you started your lessons, you're saying you're singing in choirs and writing your own music and bits and pieces, were you trying consciously yourself to emulate other singers you were aware of or emulate your father, or were you conscious that you were doing your own thing?
That's a really good question, because I think when you're young you don't really think of these things in a really reflective way. You sort of just do, don't you? You kind of learn like a sponge and you act on things. You don't necessarily reflect on things as much. I do think that whenever I would sort of start singing like my favourite pop singer at the time and start sort of belting my voice out, my dad would say, don't sing like that. You're going to hurt your voice if you sing like that. So it was sort of good to get that kind of guidance. And I think my family in a way sort of kept tabs on all those things. They'd say like, why are you singing like that? That's not you. That's not you. So I think I was really lucky to have a very supportive family. But, you know, they were really interested in me being myself. And so I do think I had those voices in my head from a pretty early age that even though at times, you know, you're always going to continue to feel like being yourself is not, you know, necessarily the best thing and you'd love to be someone else, that really when it comes down to it, it's the only real option. And I do think that I had that. I think I reflected on that sort of early on. I reflected that if I was going to have a career in music and make my own music, then it was really important that I had my own sound, my own voice, and that I sort of stayed true to that.
In using your own voice and being reminded to use it, were you also actually able to emulate those other singers you were trying to emulate before you got told off?
Oh, I think possibly what interested me more in the singers that I was really into when I was young and still now is sort of more of the way that they would phrase, the way that they would kind of sing the words. I think I was drawn to the expressiveness in their delivery and not their actual voice itself, you know. So even though I adored their voices, I wouldn't ever think of trying to emulate their actual voice, but I would think of trying to emulate their phrasing or the way they would spit out the words or embellish the words or the phrases. Yeah, so I definitely would sort of take those things on, but I don't really remember kind of really consciously kind of trying to mimic an actual voice. That never was really the thing that I was interested in, I think, even when I was young. Yeah.
My guest on Bent Notes tonight is Jeanne Slater.
Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
My guest on Bent Notes tonight is vocalist and composer Jeanne Slater. Jeanne, we were talking about how you were encouraged to use your own voice and not to emulate others and not to go and get taught in anyone's particular style until you were 16. But you did eventually move into an area at VCA where you were then being taught. Obviously by that stage, though, you knew what your voice was and what you wanted, I'm assuming.
I definitely had a little bit more of an idea, I think. I really loved the whole experience of learning singing and learning about jazz and improvised music at the VCA. But also the year before that, I started at the ANU in Canberra where I grew up, you know, in my last year of high school. And I had a great experience there. Jazz just felt like such an exciting world. I sort of really loved improvising from the very beginning, and that was always kind of a bit of a vehicle for me to explore my voice and explore different techniques and different kind of musicianship principles. So, yeah, it was an exciting time to start going really deep into something that I felt really passionate about.
In improvising by voice, did you also improvise on the piano at the same time?
Not really. I mean, I accompanied myself on piano and I learnt a lot of songs by accompanying myself on piano and a lot of the theory stuff, you know, it's very useful to have those piano skills. But the improvising was definitely mainly sort of through my voice, and I sort of learnt really initially kind of orally, and then I learnt to apply these musicianship principles to kind of develop and deepen my knowledge and my materials, I guess.
Now, your repertoire and your improvisational or compositional technique includes, as you said, songs with words as well as songs without words but with sounds, using your voice as an instrument rather than a spoken voice. Now, in a sense, that continues, I suppose, the scatting techniques of so many jazz singers in the past, but would you call what you do scatting?
I don't. Scatting to me is a little bit like a very stylistic reference to an era in the music, in jazz. And I think scatting is, you know, tends to sort of mean using lots of different syllables, trying to mimic the sound of an instrument perhaps. And those things are not as interesting to me, even though I love listening to it. I love listening to Ella and Louis. But for me, improvising is really like an extension of all of the rest of the kinds of singing that I'm going to be doing. It's just an extension of it. It's like I talk to people about it as, you know, you're humming songs in the shower all the time. You sing without words all the time, you know, everybody does. And for me, singing wordlessly is really extremely natural. And my choice of syllables and sounds is more about, you know, what's appropriate for the music that I'm singing, and trying to make it feel as much an extension of whatever the song is or whatever the mood of the music is, what I'm trying to blend with, what other instruments I'm trying to blend with. I'm trying to kind of, yeah, pick my sounds and pick the mood of the piece and kind of work with that. So I think it is quite different from that scatting kind of reference, you know, that people often think of when they think of jazz vocal improvising. Yeah.
It's certainly the first thing I thought of, but I think, was it 2 years ago at Stonington Jazz, you were performing with your choir in Vigno with Barney McCall and his Graft Suite. I wouldn't have called that scatting whatsoever, because it was very different. It was a beautiful sound from the vocalist, from the choir. Choir is called in Vigno. Why did you put it together? What was the need to have a choir?
There are a couple of reasons I put it together. In 2010, a composer's commission came up for the Melbourne Jazz Fringe Festival, and I put in a proposal to do a piece for 14 singers. And the reason I put in for that was because there were a number of singers around at the time that were really interested in improvising and using their voices in different ways. A lot of them were ex-students of mine, and then others were, you know, singers around town that I knew were interested in that kind of thing. That sort of was an opportunity, I guess, to put something together. But also, I was really interested in vocal music, choral music. I was sort of listening to a lot of that and thinking about ways that I would like to write for that sort of setting. So those two things really fueled the initial idea to put this commission in, and I got the commission, which was great. And the process of that first piece, putting it together, rehearsing it, was incredibly fun and really rewarding for all of the singers involved. And I sort of knew from that very first performance that this was something that I was going to have to continue.
It wasn't going to be a one-off.
It wasn't going to be a one-off. It was really so beneficial for everyone involved, I felt, and quite a sort of special and rare kind of thing. Yeah.
Now, there's two words that strike me as are interesting. One is the name of the choir is in Vigno. The other is the name of the piece you had commissioned this year, 2015, for PBS, Young Elder of Jazz, called Maya, which is a Sanskrit word for a trick of perception. Both interesting words. Was there something behind the choice of those two words, in Vigno for the choir and Maya for this particular commission?
Yeah, well, I guess when I'm trying to think of names for projects, or it usually is not doesn't start with the idea of trying to name something. It starts with the idea of trying to come up with a concept or a theme that will drive the music. And so in Vigno came about because I was really interested in trying to come up with a name from the group that described in a way or primed people for a kind of perhaps a timeless experience of an era-less kind of styleless experience of the music. Picking a kind of Latin word felt an appropriate idea. And so then I sort of just went searching for a word that that felt like it would sum it up. And in Vigno, I guess, you know, what we're interested in exploring is really the underexplored in the voice. And so the idea of kind of invention, or the idea of trying to come up with something a little bit new and yet something that may feel like it's always existed, something kind of timeless and primal. So that's how I came up with that. And Maya was similar. You know, I had an idea of the kinds of things that I wanted to explore in the music, and I was reading a lot of material at the time that sort of pointed in that direction. And so the word sort of ends up kind of summing up a lot of the stuff that I'm kind of interested in at the time. that was the case for Maya as well.
I think you've got the best of both worlds with a choir who can sing both words and sounds. Opportunities create, I suppose, a full work with just the one group. Do you have a preference for voice only, or do you prefer to have the voice with the backing group, the instrumentalists, or does it depend entirely upon what it is that you're trying to achieve at the time?
Yeah, I think it depends on the kind of music and the sound that you want and the people that you want to work with, I guess. I've been really fortunate to work with a lot of really great singers, but in my vocal ensemble, and also some other really wonderful singers over the course of my career. I love performing just with voices. I think that's a very special and quite a unique and special space. But I have a lot of friends and colleagues that I've worked with, instrumentalists who are, you know, just really inspiring, have really inspired me. And I continue to really enjoy working with them and working with trying to blend the voice with instruments and trying to make something something that kind of incorporates all of these different kinds of qualities of sound into something that is one sound. I guess that's something that I really like in music.
Which is quite a challenge.
It is, yeah.
My guest tonight on Bent Notes is vocalist and composer Jan Slater.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
I simply remember my favourite things, and then I don't feel so bad.
You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9, where my guest is vocalist and composer Jan Slater. And we just heard a piece of music then called My Favourite Things, and that wasn't from your Still Still album, as can probably be told from the feel of that particular piece. It's from an album called Seasons of Love, which is a collection of 14 tracks with yourself, Eddie Perfect, Tony Gould, David Jones, Tamara Murphy, and a number of other Aussie musos. That must have been a glorious album to make.
It was fun because Graham and Gould and John Hoffman, you know, they've all been friends for a really long time, and it was pretty inspiring to sort of be in a room with the three of them carrying on and having a ball and playing beautifully. Graham's arrangements really stunning, and yeah, it was fun. I sang a lot of the songs live in the room with the orchestra. So that's a really old-fashioned way of doing things. You usually don't do things that way these days. But I enjoyed it. It was because it was so, you know, to sort of be completely enveloped by this sound in the room, feel that you're actually, you know, you're making your choices in the moment with those people in the room. It was very, very special. And as I said, to be part of something that Tony Gould and Graham Lyle put together is a really special thing, yeah.
Something else that's special is that you're performing at this year's Wangaratta Festival of Jazz and Blues. In fact, it's coming very close next weekend, in fact, and you're on stage at the Holy Trinity Cathedral on Sunday, which is a beautiful venue. Yeah. You'll be performing with a lady who is now based in New York, but she was over in Australia for many, many years from when she was very young, Linda Oh. She grew up learning piano, clarinet and bassoon before she started with the electric and the double bass. And she was educated over at WAPA in WA, from which have come many amazing performers. And she's a lecturer now in the States. And she has performed at Wangaratta before. In fact, she performed with yourself a couple of years ago.
Yes. So Linda, I've known Linda for a few years now. I actually performed with her at Bennett's Lane maybe 4 years ago. She was on a tour and brought a band out from New York, and she asked me to sing on this gig and to learn some of her really beautiful music. And so I did that, and we did a couple of duos as part of that concert. Adrian Jackson was at that performance. Adrian Jackson, the festival director of Wangaratta Jazz Festival, and he really liked it. So he said, you know, I'd love for you to do a slot at Wangaratta Jazz Festival. That was the following year. So, yeah, 2013 we did a duo set at Wangaratta, and, yeah, it was really really fun. She's a really incredible musician, and we had a lot of fun together. And so we're doing the same thing again, but different music.
So you could just about just take the tape from last time, replay it, and just hang around. Yeah. What will we be hearing this year?
So last time we played, we played jazz standards, and we put together a program of standards that we both really love. And this time we're going to do some standards, and we're also going to do some of our original pieces. Linda has sent me a couple of her songs, and I've sent her a couple of mine. And, of course, with just double bass and voice, there are so many different things you can do with the arrangements. So even the songs that I've performed and recorded before are going to sound really different, and I really love that. I love giving those pieces new life. So, yeah, it's going to be really fun.
I suppose that's one thing about music in general, but jazz in particular, that you can have a piece of music that'll sound a certain way today. Tomorrow it can sound completely different.
Absolutely.
Just depending upon potentially the person, how the person's feeling at the time, if it's exactly the same in all other respects. But when you put different groupings together, voice and bass, or voice in a small group and voice in a big group, etc., so many options.
It's true. Absolutely. Yeah.
When you get together and obviously have fun, is there a bit of rivalry there as well, one-upmanship, or is it literally an opportunity for two musicians to just get down and have fun?
That's definitely my attitude, and I'm pretty sure it would be Linda's too. I'm not really competitive, and I love playing music with people, and I love all of the spontaneous and unexpected things that happen. And I think, you know, I love playing with people that I trust. They make me perform better, and I like to think that, you know, people might have the same feeling performing with me, that they trust me and that they can go for things and take risks and be the best that they can be in that moment. And I think that's the spirit that you go into a performance with, the attitude. If you're really open and really supportive and really trusting, then that often sort of leads to best music making. Yeah, in my opinion, yeah.
It is that trust that the other musician is going to put in just as much energy and effort as yourself, and you're working together for an outcome.
That's right, yeah. You're trying to find something together. That's what's so special about playing jazz, improvising, is that sharing of that space together, not really knowing where it's going to go, but really having a lot of trust in each other and having, you know, and having some fun and trying some things out, you know.
Next Sunday you'll be performing in the cathedral, the Holy Trinity Cathedral in Wangaratta.
It's
what
beautiful.
A beautiful space, a beautiful sound. Mm. I've tried to make sure that I've been there for one or two shows every year just to be able to sit in this beautiful space. It looks great, but it's got a beautiful sound to it. Do you enjoy working in that type of a space?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think for certain instruments, working in a kind of really reverberant space like a church is tricky. You know, I think with a really amplified instruments, it can be really tricky. With drums, it can be really tricky. But, yeah, singing in a room like that is really a joy because, you know, your voice just kind of resonates in the space in a really beautiful sort of way. It's just a more effortless experience in many ways. You're not fighting with the room. It's kind of giving you some love. So it is really lovely, and especially with double bass and voice, it's of course will be amplified, but only as much as we need to be in that space. So yeah, it's a really lovely room to do that kind of thing in.
A beautiful space to play. Jan, thank you so much for popping into Bent Nights tonight and having a chat about where you've been musically, where you started to learn to sing, and then more importantly, of course, what's happening next week at Wangaratta. For more information, we can go to wangarattajazz.com, but you have your own website, jeanslater.com, and there's lots of great information there. I think we should go out with another piece from your latest album, Still Still. Favourite piece?
I think the title track, Still Still, is possibly my favourite. I think, you know, because it sort of sums up the sound of the ensemble and the sound of the music of this album. So, yeah.
Jan Slater, thank you so much for visiting Bent Notes tonight.
Thanks for having me. We'll be right back.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.